perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone. And now, please welcome your host, Freeman.
Well, hello, all you crazy tinfoil hat wearing friends of mine. I love you all. Thank you all for tuning in and joining us here on the Free Zone. Have a wonderful show for you tonight. We're going to be talking with Dr. David Lewis Anderson of the Anderson Institute, all on time travel and time control technologies. I'm looking forward to that. But before we get there, I thought I should hit you up with some of the latest news that's popped up in Vatican curiosities and Disney sorceries and just all kinds of madness that's going on around us. Most curious story to date right now, of course, is the Lucifer instrument that is helping astronomers see through the darkness. Yes, a Lucifer telescope has been placed in Arizona by the Vatican. Now, I'll tell you, they had to work very hard to make this telescope's name Lucifer. Get this, the Lucifer telescope is the large binocular telescope near-infrared utility with camera and integral field unit for extragalactic research. You have to take two breaths in that one. I mean, they had to work at that. This is a chilled instrument attached to a telescope in Arizona, and yeah, it's named for the devil. But the Vatican says this is not their fault, but the fault of the Germans that put this together for them. And the German folks that had a response to the title and people asking why the Vatican would have a Lucifer telescope, said that they wouldn't have the hesitation that Americans would have since it's a very secular country. But he could be completely off. He's not sure. They didn't get to talk to the actual Germans who crafted it. Why they named it the Lucifer is really a curious thing. Like I say, the large binocular telescope near-infrared utility with camera and integral field unit for extragalactic research. You had to work at that to make the Vatican telescope mean Lucifer. Insane. Disney's coming out with a new product, and normally I won't talk about these sort of things, but this one caught my eye. It's called the Kane Chronicles. So we're going back to some of the serpent connections and Kane and the Freemason connections. And this is all about the ancient Egyptian gods coming back to life. Imagine that. And they say Set, the Egyptian god of the dead, the evil one, has his sights on the Kanes. And, of course, it includes their mother's death, as all Disney films will do. Well, this is a book at this time coming out very shortly. I'll give you my book review as soon as I have it. But the brilliant Egyptologist Dr. Julius Kane is out to try and stop the world as it unleashes the Egyptian god Set onto the world. So should be a very interesting thing. Disney never ceases to amaze me. We are working very hard on our Weird Stuff magazine, and Set and these Egyptian gods play a heavy role in the magazine, so I thought it really curious with Walt Disney's timing. And I often wonder if they are having a look at my work. Speaking of which, Fox News reported that the HTV2 was a failure. Now, as you might remember, last Friday, there were two launches, one from Florida, one from California. The one from Florida was launching the X-37B Space War vehicle, the robotic mini space shuttle that no one can really tell you what it's going to do. But it is now orbiting our Earth and will be up there for up to about 9 months and can drop into any war field anywhere in the world within minutes. But not so lucky with the HTV-2, or the hypersonic technology vehicle, which had to splash down right about the time that the X-37B was launching. Well, Fox News says conspiracy theorists are having a field day with this one. So far, I'm the only one I know of covering this topic. Dr. Anderson founded the TTRC, or Advanced Time Technology Research Laboratory, where he gave and brought together a comprehensive overview on time travel. And his documentary, you can see it, it's called Time Travel, Journeys into Time. He is now president of the Anderson Institute, the Anderson LLC, holds many patents on time reactor designs. These are used for energy production and time control technologies. And Dr. Anderson, I am very excited to talk with you.
Hello, Freeman. It is such a pleasure to be here on the Freeman Perspective and Freeman TV. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome. Well, I wanted to just get right to the beginning here and understand, well, first, you started off in the military at a young age working for advanced research and development. Is that DARPA?
Not initially DARPA, no. Initially, it was Air Force Systems Command.
Okay. And in this area of research, I mean, at Edwards Air Force Base now, many of us connect this with UFOs, with high technology, advanced flight patterns. Were you involved in any of these earlier black operations, or can you tell me?
Well, I can't talk a lot about my activities at in Air Force Systems Command at Edwards Air Force Base, and that shouldn't be a surprise to many of your listeners. But actually, when I did initially begin my work with the Air Force, it was not in the field of space-time physics or time control technologies. It actually is something that evolved within my first 2 or 3 years working for the United States Air Force.
All right. Well, what got you interested in the time travel and time control technologies? And more importantly, what made you think it was possible?
Oh, I love that question, Freeman. It's fantastic. I think the question I'd ask your listeners is why it surprises me that anybody think it would not be possible. As a matter of fact, to be very specific about that, in 1949, Kurt Gödel, a German mathematician, took Einstein's equations and demonstrated mathematically that not only time travel to the future was possible, but that time could actually loop back on itself into the past. In 1974, a physicist by the name of Frank Tipler actually wrote a paper that received a lot of attention on how to build a time machine, and it clearly showed how time travel was completely possible within the laws of our math and physics, which is absolutely true today and has never been disproven. What's also amazing to me is that many listeners probably are not aware that not only is it possible, but there are now five government and private agencies around the world active every day in time control technology. So initially my focus wasn't there, but I was working on high-speed space-based navigation systems for the Air Force, and I observed something quite unusual in some experiments we were doing, which led to a mathematical model describing something in physics called inertial frame dragging, where a rotating body like the Earth in space actually twists space-time around it. And I came up with a mathematical model that actually had never existed before, describing the effects of inertial frame dragging, which later became time warp field theory. And at the time, I hoped to pursue that work in the Air Force, but at the time, they weren't interested, so I took it outside and founded what was called the Time Technology Research Center.
Amazing. Well, you said that it would be that it was fairly simple. I myself, I was an algebra tutor. I love algebra. It's something I do for fun. Do you think I would be able to have the aptitude to be able to work out time travel?
Do you know what's absolutely amazing is it's interesting that you mention that, because there's an exercise. I speak at universities all around the world, and when I'm working with young college physics students, one of the first things that we teach them is that if you can overcome the limitation of the way your mind works through your biological and cultural evolution and the way your senses are limited, you can actually boil down the complex world of space-time physics to basic algebra. And it is very possible. It's a very difficult thing to do because we don't see the universe and the world around us the way it is. We see it the way we are.
And some of our thoughts have gone to the idea that the universe is mental, that consciousness is actually manufacturing reality. Quantum physics shows us that, you know, particles not there until we look at it. Is this a connection with time travel? Would this affect time travel? Is it in our minds?
I think two parts of that. Absolutely, yes. The world truly is what we did label reality. Most scientists today would agree it's a fabrication of our minds. We do know, and it's interesting that it's taken this long, over millennia, for the scientific community to show so many people that in the super colliders and particle accelerators, we can see matter transform into energy, energy back into matter. We see through quantum mechanics and physics that the world truly is a dynamic web of information and energy. And And clearly, that's something that many sacred religions have held near and dear for millennia. And it's kind of interesting to see the scientific world converging with what many people would call ancient wisdom. But the short answer is yes. Also, there's clearly very possible to move forward and backwards in time, whether it be information or matter or living organisms.
Well, I have to jump on that one. Have we sent things back in time?
The short answer is absolutely yes. I could stop there, but that probably would be unacceptable for your listeners. Actually, there are five countries today. Japan is quite actively doing work sending information forward and backwards in time. Russia has been involved in this since the 1960s. We know that. Because we've seen actually recently the U.S. government was funding a project through Princeton University and Dr. Lejun Wang where he demonstrated the ability to send information faster than light, essentially backwards in time. This is work Russia was doing back in the 1960s, and Dr. Wang built incredibly on top of that and spread the word even further. But Russia is an organization. The United States, we have S4, we have the Anderson Institute doing work, and we also have the University of Connecticut and Dr. Mallett, who's campaigning very aggressively to get into the game. We're working with South Korea, governments and agencies there, and India. Well, India is just leaving the rest of the world in the dust when it comes to time-controlled technology work.
Well, fantastic. We're coming up on the break right now. I'd love to pick it up when we get to the other side on the idea of the religion aspect and how some of these nations are all right with time travel or even human cloning, as Dr. Zavos found out in the Middle East, that, you know, our certain religious belief systems will open these possibilities. We're going to explore the world of time travel and time control technologies with Dr. David Lewis Anderson of the Anderson Institute. Very good time talking with you, David.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So I guess the most obvious question is, does time really exist?
Well, you know, it's for me, it's I would tell to your listeners, this is probably perhaps one of the most exciting, undiscovered frontiers that we're exploring. And the question you're asking, Freeman, is a question that has been asked for millennia throughout the history of human societies on this planet. We've seen philosophers like Plato describe time as the moving image of eternity. We've seen Aristotle call it the number of measure of motion. We've seen it described as the productive life of the soul. But I think the definition that I think has stood the test of time for hundreds and hundreds of years has been St. Augustine, where he described time as an illusionary product of our mind. And it's so true. And St. Augustine actually captured that in something, a mental exercise. And it's very simply, it's a quote he said. He says, "What then is time? If no one asks me, I know. But if I wish to explain it to one that asketh, I know not." And the example I would give to your listeners, and maybe even a challenge, is the next time you're with friends or family or walking down the street and you see somebody you know, do a test. Ask them if they know what time is. They're going to nod their head and say yes. And then follow it up immediately and say, "Please explain it to me." And they will be at a loss for words. And St. Augustine really captured the essence of time. We truly see that time does vary. It's a function of our biological evolution. There are even cultures on this planet that have no sense of the nature of time. For example, if we look closely at the language of the Navajo and Hopi Indian tribes here in North and South America, they don't have verb tenses for past, present, and future in their stories. And in their language, they can't and never refer to the temporal quality of something happening, only the quality of an event. We see tribes like the Paraha tribe of Brazil, who has no concept of time, and other cultures spread out around the world. So while we, in some cultures, view time so linearly, what we really truly see in the laboratories and through evidence around the world is that time truly doesn't exist. It really is an illusionary product of our mind, created by our minds and bodies' perceptions.
Well, that begs the question of the time control and time travel technology. Is this a device? Is this a mental perception? Or how does that work?
Well, it's interesting if you ask the question that way. I would say there's two ways to look at it. First off, if you look in our culture, we look at time so incredibly linearly, and unfortunately, it's not. If you look at other cultures, like in Asia, if you talk to a Buddhist monk and you ask him, why does time move forward and pull and drag us along? What is its unseen force? He will be completely lost. In his mind, in his culture, in his beliefs, he sees all time existing at once. And so to answer your question specifically, we see multiple ways to move through time. And that's what's really fascinating about this subject. There is no one answer. There are some people, Freeman, who like to say this answer is right and this answer is wrong about time. That no, the spiritual beliefs about time are right. The beliefs of religion are correct. No, this view in science or that view in science. The truth is, the spiritual views of science or the beliefs that people have the ability within the human mind to transcend time and space, the ability to use very high speeds and acceleration to transcend time, or fields of closed time like curves and the technologies that generate these. These are all one part of one and the same and inseparable.
Interesting. It's definitely a curious subject, one that's been at my heart for a long time. Now, we have, you had mentioned Large Hadron Colliders and the use of particle physics. They have Shiva standing outside of the CERN Institute. And I'm wondering about India. You had said that they were way up on their time travel and that this was one of the main countries performing these type of experiments. Why India?
Well, it's a great question that people have been asking me recently because, first off, the extent of their operation, they are not only working on time control technologies for transport of information forward and backwards in time. They're doing the same thing for matter and living organisms. But what's exciting about India is the investment that they've made. They're not only experimenting with the technologies, they've already developed their mission plans and their operational infrastructure and the commercialization plans for some of the technologies coming out of their research. I've been to some of their facilities just outside of Mumbai and also in the state of Maharashtra, and it's absolutely amazing what they're doing. Why India, Freeman? I have a personal view on that. First off, when you look at the views of the world, and which I think is true, and I clearly see as true in the laboratory, that the world is a dynamic web of energy and we're all interconnected, these are views that the basic religions of that area of the world have held sacred for thousands of years. So in their cultural evolution, they have a completely different view of time than us. Secondly, the second point, and I'll stop there, is the leadership of India. Different than many countries, the presidents of India are elected based upon their promiscuity in the fields of science. So you'll see the presidents of India being some of the most revered and respected scientists of their nation, not necessarily politicians. So there's a natural leaning towards that area as well.
I like that. I like that. Well, so this begs another question. It's just one question after another, right, with time travel. If we're capable of this now, then people in the future obviously would be capable of it. Are we aware of time travelers coming to our time?
I think many people believe that. In our experiments, I would not say that we've made contact in that manner. Many people do believe, and it's not my area of expertise. I'm a scientist. I'm a physicist. But one thing people ask me many times, well, are UFOs and all these sightings of unidentified flying objects and other phenomena, possibly time travelers from the future? I can't answer that question. What I can answer is when you study the observations of what a observer sees in terms of light phenomenon and sound and the experience to the human senses, and you work backwards and said, okay, if we use the technologies available for time control and we used it to send a ship through time, what would be the observable physical effect in our world? And it lines up almost 98% with the reported phenomenon and what's perceived in observations of UFOs. So do I believe that? I'm not qualified to answer that question, but that'd be how I'd respond, Freeman.
Right. Well, that's pretty interesting there. A lot of people have thought that thought. Well, I think we're coming back on another break here, and so I wanted to get into you some of the perils of time travel. Or perhaps before we begin with that, let's have you describe what the device is, how this works, what it looks like, and the amazement that people seem to have when viewing it. This song is apropos, I must say. John Lennon is making me wonder, could I be younger with time travel technology? I am talking with Dr. David Lewis Anderson of the Anderson Institute. And Dr. Anderson, I would like for you to tell us a little bit about the Anderson Institute. What do you do? How is it done? And where are you at?
Well, we're located in the northwest corner of New Mexico. We are a private research laboratory that focuses on essentially on time control technology research. Also, we're, as many people may know, your listeners might know, is that we're very active right now in campaigning within our organization and also with our partners and other scientists around the world to bring time control technology work that's being done right now into the public eye for a lot of reasons, because of what you mentioned before the break of the while there are temptations to use the technology for good, there are incredible opportunities for things to go terribly wrong with the application of the technology if not used prudently.
Absolutely. And we'll definitely get to that. What is this time machine device anyway?
You're asking about our time, our system that we use. We actually use what's called a time warp field generator. And this is, we developed a time warp field generator in the 1980s, refined it in the 1990s, and we reached our third generation in 2002, which we're actually still working with today. And essentially what a time warp field generator is, it allows us to create in a laboratory environment, a spherical field inside of which we can actually accelerate, slow down, or even reverse time rates within the field. It allows us to do, in a controlled environment, to do experiments with matter, with information, with living organisms. We spent a lot of time in our first two generations trying to understand what we were observing. There were a lot of phenomenon that we didn't quite understand. In our third generation, we finally realized how to better control some of the more difficult aspects of a time warp field in an area we call the boundary layer of the field, which gets quite complex. But essentially, that's it. If you're a viewer watching the field, it's quite a remarkable experience. It's quite a loud, spectacular opening of the field because we use a chemical reagent, high-powered lasers, rotating electromagnetic fields, and when the field opens, it's quite spectacular. Then it stabilizes, and that's when we can begin doing our experiments. Field size itself is about today just under 2 meters in diameter.
Oh, that's not big enough for a human then. Or 2 meters. I'm sorry.
Two meters.
Sorry.
I went metric on you, Freeman.
Yes, you did. Well, I'm thinking about different time travel. I have movies and scenarios, H.G. Wells, The Time Machine. Well, first of all, are you aware of shows like Stargate or Sliders?
Slightly, yes, I am. I'm more aware of some of the old literature in speculation about time travel, but some of the shows, yes, I'm familiar with.
I was curious of the time wave field, if it would look more like the Sliders type scenario or the Stargate, where they're walking through a water field. Go ahead.
It's quite interesting. It does not look like a Sliders phenomenon. We actually did a lecture in New York 2 weekends ago, and for the first time publicly, we showed a video of a time warp field, and actually a time warp field generator in an experiment. And actually, there is a watery effect. It's not like in Stargate And it varies in color, intensity, and opaqueness, depending on what type of experiment you're doing and the conditions of the field. I would say maybe it has a little bit of a watery effect, but it's actually an illusion. There's nothing you can sense there. It's more the boundary layer affecting the visible light spectrum that's passing through it.
So now in H.G. Wells' Time Machine, the character throws a person out of the field, and he then degenerates and dies. Did you have effects like this? If you put your hand outside of the field from inside, what would happen? Is there death?
You know, it's interesting. The short answer is no, but we did have something similar, and it had nothing to do with the phenomenon of time. When you have an area like a spherical field and time is moving at a very fast rate or slow rate inside, and then you have a rate of time that's different outside, you get a very interesting effect in the boundary layer where frequencies are Dopplered upward or downward depending on what you're doing. And actually, in our early generators, our greatest problem was that some of the high energy in the field would be actually Dopplered upward to harmful radiation. So living organisms like plants we were doing experiment with would actually deteriorate and die. But that was due more to a very simple physical explanation of radiation being created by Dopplering higher frequencies to a higher level.
Okay. So, yeah, no major accidents at the Institute so far?
No, there are some plant seedlings that we mourn every day, and yes, we've gone through quite a bit of them, and they are living organisms that share our universe, so we do feel them, but no major catastrophes, even though we are quite concerned. The range of capabilities of this technology have grown quite high, not just at the Anderson Institute, but at other organizations, and people are getting much more brave with their experiments, perhaps without understanding the consequences, which is one of the great, great risks.
Right, and why we have you out here, so that the world will know that this is real and this is going on and they need to catch up with the science.
Absolutely.
Speak of high-performance time reactors or systems for energy production. Would this then give us anti-gravity? I'm thinking of one of those balls that move back and forth, and then you could slow or speed that up. Now, that would seemingly affect gravity in our way. So could we pull out energy technologies and perhaps even anti-gravity technologies from this?
Well, the first thing, just for your listeners' benefit, when we first built a time warp field generator, once we started a field, it took quite a bit of power to initiate a field. But after it was initiated, we noticed there was more power being generated than we were actually putting into it, which violates the laws of physics. For 13 to 14 years of time warp field experiments, we didn't understand what we were seeing. We finally did. And actually, what a time warp field generator was doing was tapping into the curve, the energy, the potential energy in curved space-time around the Earth caused by inertial frame dragging. And the second half of your question, Freeman, was?
Okay, so we have energy projection, the energy projection, and a possible use of anti-gravity.
Anti-gravity. Well, the first answer is no. While there are some effects on gravity, the modern-day view of physics, and even Einstein agreed this in his later years, is gravity doesn't exist. And I would encourage your listeners to chase this. It's kind of like the question of time. You know, we all in high school, we learned the formulas for gravity. We pat ourselves on the back because we know that if we drop a pebble down the well, we use 16 times the acceleration times time squared. We know the distance. We understand what gravity is. No, we don't. Gravity is a label we put on something that we don't understand. Do we really think there's a big hand behind the moon that's pressing it towards the Earth as it rotates around? The answer is no. And physicists today, most of the peers I work with clearly see that gravity does not exist. It's simply curved space-time in action. And this is something Einstein said. Einstein in his later years even agreed that his theory of general relativity based on gravity was completely useless. It was just a special case of the special theory of relativity. So I like to use that as an example to chime in and remind people, what is gravity? Why do objects, if I'm holding a ball in my hand, why when I let it go does it fall to the Earth? Because of 16 AT squared or the formulas for gravity? No. Why does it truly happen? Gravity is a label we put on things that we don't understand. I'd even challenge your listeners one step further. The question is not, why when I remove my hand does the ball fall to the earth? The question is, why do I need to hold my hand there to keep the ball from falling, following its natural course that it wants to follow? Two very different perspectives.
Now, Michael Jackson, beloved Michael Jackson, he was planning for his death. He talked to people, roboticists, about developing a robot to transmit his soul into that robot. He thought much about his death. He talked about it with Lady Diana, Princess Diana. He talked about it with his Lisa Marie Presley. He thought about his death a lot, and he thought about it so much. But when he was purchasing King Tut's sarcophagus, he was questioned as to whether he was going to be buried in that sarcophagus. And Michael Jackson said, no, I'm going to live forever. Well, Michael sets up his 50-show tour at the O2 Arena and then mysteriously dies. Or did he? Because a month after his death, suddenly in the Chicago Museum, a bust of Michael Jackson from ancient Egypt appears. A bust that no one had noticed any time before his death. But a month after his death, now there's this bust sitting in the Chicago Museum. And to us, it would seem that it had been there always. But now we're talking about time travel. What if Michael wrote in a new timeline? Is this possible, Dr. Anderson?
Well, I don't know the specifics of that exact scenario, but I will say we do an experiment. We do a number of experiments to address this. It's a big question. When time control technology is exercised, will we know it? Will we know the effects? When we go back and we change an event and re-engineer a historical timeline, will the people in the future recognize that the timeline has been changed? And what we see in the laboratory is clearly not, with one exception. We do believe, without a lot of experimental evidence, that there are some people, a small percentage of the population, that are sensitive and able to sense modifications that have occurred in a timeline. But let me tell you something very similar. This is the first time I've heard about the bust on your show here in Chicago. We do an experiment called Brothers and Sisters, where we use families of seedlings and generations, and we will move seedlings backwards in time, and we will we'll move backwards in time, and we'll destroy something, destroy a generation, and come back. And what's interesting is that the scientists in the laboratory, while the object or the target of the experiment returns with the DNA profiles of the generations that were taken, that were established and exterminated, when they return to the present timeline, we actually see a change in what has occurred in the laboratory. We have no knowledge that anything was modified, but clearly the information we sent back in time with the DNA profiles of these families of seedlings and what returns then is completely different than what we started the experiment with, and we have no conscious view of that. And it's one of the fallacies that I blame on the movies about this common belief about parallel universes. It's simply not true what we're seeing in the laboratory, that parallel timelines spin off.
Hmm. Well, that was going to be my next question, so I'm glad that you hit that.
If I could comment on parallel universes,
yes, please.
A little bit. You know, a lot of people talk about, one of the most popular paradoxes is the grandfather paradox. If I go back in time and kill my grandfather, I would no longer exist, so therefore I couldn't have gone back in time, so my grandfather would be born, but now I am born too, so I can go back in time. These paradoxes, just like every paradox we see in physics, is simply places where our rational minds bump into our own minds, bodies, and senses, perceptions and limitations. In the case of the grandfather paradox, if a person were travel back in time and kill their grandfather, as we see in our brother and sister's experiment with plant living organisms, that person would kill their grandfather. They would continue to exist, but by doing that event, they've basically reshaped the construct of reality, meaning that, for example, in the case of the sets of family of seedlings that we use in our experiments, by going back and destroying a previous generation, we actually change the construct of reality. The certain seedlings no longer come into existence. Some of the brothers and sisters just simply are no longer there. New ones appear. In some cases, things go terribly in another direction.
Hmm. So what about re-engineering historical timelines?
Oh, this is a very sensitive point for us, and I would say the scientific community, at least the scientists I know that are living every day in the middle of the research, are split. There seem to be, you know, Freeman, and many people see it, so many temptations to...
Well, we seem to have lost David
technology.
There. Oh, we lost you there for a second.
Oh, we could make trips to... Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. We could take trips to the future... and could cure diseases or bring back medical technology to save lives. With the technology already available, there would be no more need for research to actually develop it. Both this process, though, and the survivors would change the future that the technology had come from. And if we did say the future technology were to be banned to avoid this, then the patients that, say, perhaps had enough money would be tempted to travel to a time where they could receive better treatment. We could even see petitions drawn up to restore extinct species or intervene in tragedies to save lives. But why we see so many benefits, Freeman, simply put, we're experimenting with technologies, not at the Anderson Institute, but all around the world now, several organizations are, that the consequences are not understood. There's really an unpredictable complex web of interdependencies when you exercise a technology like time control technology. The very process can have ripple effects that redefine individual lives and consciousness. We could transmit viruses through times. We could drive the extinction of the human race. We could see even global catastrophes inadvertently created. And even with many of the interests of several governments, we could see the world's first great time war. So there are many risks that have to be considered and weighed as we look at this.
Well, can you tell me more about the time war? What would that mean?
Well, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. A time war, many governments, you know, what is the purpose of a nation? The fundamental goal of a nation is first to survive and then to prosper. And one of the fundamental tenets of strategy, whether it be military strategy, political strategy, business strategy, is you keep your technology secret. And most of the governments that are experimenting and have programs active now look at the use of the technology to establish better opportunities to survive and prosper, whether that means weaponization of the technology or reengineering of timelines for political and economic gains. There are many implications.
Yes, very frightening and also positive. I suppose we, you know, if the good people were in charge of the technology, but it's hard to know who's going to end up with what and how that's all going to go.
Well, that's a great question. You know, who should be working with this technology? With the ability now to send information or matter or living organisms forward and backwards in time, what do we do with the knowledge? How do we handle it? Who should have access to it? And given its implications into actually redefining a sentient and conscious life, or having catastrophic ripple effects, there are some very serious questions that need to be answered.
Very serious. I'm very glad that you're coming out and telling the world you felt that this was necessary at this point.
Absolutely. But I would explain to your listeners that it's challenging. And when you look at a Freeman, and I'd encourage your listeners to think about it, when you look at a scientific breakthrough like time control technologies, it offers commercial prospects and tremendous interest from both the private sector and private enterprise. And when you also look at the financial aspirations and power of these large businesses, as well as the political and economical aspirations and power of governments, you can't underestimate their influence. It's extremely...
Well, we've covered parallel universes, paradoxes, and re-engineering historical timelines, and a potential for the first great time war. As disturbing as all of these things are, what other perils are there with time travel or time control technologies?
Well, Freeman, my first comment would be is that I also like to focus on the good, and I would tell your listeners that in among the many scientists I work with, while I see many agencies and organizations politically and profit motivated around the technology, I also see many people who really truly care about the benefits of the technology. And I always remind people breaking things into good and evil are sometimes dangerous because we use those to justify to stop thinking, sometimes justify to do bad things. So we're kind of all part of the same situation. So I think there's also a lot of positives. But as you say, you're absolutely right. The risks here are severe.
Well, we watch as CERN. I'm sorry, Dan. I'm just thinking that we watch as CERN just punches holes and opens potential black holes, strangelets. They don't know. No one knows what's going to happen when they do these experiments for the first time. Or HARP launching itself and shutting down power all over the nation. Turning something like this on, you just don't know what might happen.
Well, you know, that's the fundamental point of the risk here. Anytime a society has unprecedented acquisition of knowledge and power, along with that higher knowledge and power, the greater must be our sense of moral responsibility. When you look at things like super colliders and nuclear energy, we've danced on the edge of the razor blade, Freeman, and we've managed to survive as a human society. But if we really look at the human ethics around this, we really must accept that the greater our knowledge and power, we have to have a greater capacity for moral reasoning. And until recently, with these other technologies, with HARP, with nuclear energy, which is pretty much very much on the edge of a razor blade, and these other technologies, we could say that as a society, we've been pretty effective, that our capacity for moral reasoning has kept pace with our development of our human knowledge and our own mental capacity. But that's not what we're seeing now. We're talking about, with time control technology, the actual process of making history in experimental science, of reaching forward and backwards in time, moving things in that direction, retrieving things, and ripple effects that are beyond the human capacity to predict, yet we're willing to do it. It's incredibly foolish, probably just by about any perspective you would look at it from.
Now, would you be able to tell if someone was using time travel technologies?
Actually, yes, we can. And it's actually a very fundamental part of what we do, Freeman. We don't talk about the problem without a solution. We have a four-step plan at the Anderson Institute, and we're working with our colleagues around the world. One, full technology and disclosure and transparency. Number two, the launch of a global education initiative. Number three, the hard part, the establishment of a global moral compass to guide any further development and any further use of the technology. And number three is monitoring. And we actually have a technology we call a temporal tremor detector, a TTD, that can detect any time time control technologies themselves are activated. And it's a very important part of our four-step plan because we have to be able to regulate and monitor on a global basis what is happening.
So you think we'd ever end up with, like, time police?
I think we have to. I think, you know, the question is now, you know, a lot of people ask Freeman, why don't you just stop? Why do you keep moving forward and create a need for something like the time police? It's too late, Freeman. It's far too late. Too many people have their hands on the technology, and not all of them have the best interests of the global consciousness and a global society at heart. And the technology is going to be experimented with. What we need to make sure is that it's guided with wisdom and that we do monitor it. So in a way, yes, we do need a world time organization, as we label it, or a time police, if you want to be a little more dramatic and play to the sci-fi. It's a very accurate description.
This is too much, Dr. Anderson. This is a mind-blowing topic that I just love. It's fantastic. You're with the perfect audience here. I'll tell you that right now.
It's an absolutely amazing field. You know, sometimes, Freeman, and for your audience, you know, you have a very interesting audience, and I know they're very open-minded. And at the Anderson Institute, we're a group of scientists, mathematicians, computer scientists, pretty much your stereotypical. But we do encourage our own staff and everybody around us to take a multidisciplinary approach to time. And if any of your people are out there saying this guy is nuts, read. Please visit our website. Take a look at the cultures that have evolved on the same planet that have no concept of time and how they look at us as being totally insane when we say time is linear and it moves forward. Take a look at the cultures. Take a look at the expressions in literature and art of the sciences that have been around and proven for decades, yet we kind of shrink the magic of all this to our daily routine and material possessions. We don't want to see it, but it's very real and it's very exciting.
Well, you had mentioned off the air that some people inside of the Institute might have heard of the Freeman perspective.
Absolutely. Actually, we have a program. Literally, everybody on our team comes out of the world of science, mathematics, or computer science. But we have a policy that 8 hours of everybody's work every month must be on the presentation, group discussion, and study of a non-scientific perspective of time. This is why we encourage the study of time from the expression in art, in literature, in historical religious views and spirituality across physics and other observed phenomenon that some people would call frontier science or just totally, you know, wacky or nuts.
The fringe.
The fringe, yes.
There we are.
But, you know, Freeman, in a way, people have been struggling for millennia to understand the nature of time, and we still don't. So we have to look at it from every perspective. There's not one right and wrong answer. They're all part and one and the same.
Right. Well, okay, we're coming up on a break again in these commercials. I was thinking about old Dr. Doom, Major Ed Danes, who founded SciTech. He also was working with the military, and they were not at all interested in his psychic technologies that he was developing. I'm wondering about you and when you left the Air Force, and we'll have to pick that up after the break. Did they want your time travel technology? So we ended that with me talking a little bit about Dr. Doom and his psychic or psi-tech technology and opening LLCs to use psychic technology. Now, he had been working for the military, and they were refusing to accept his technology, and he went out and began his own corporation. Can't say anything about his predictions so far. I haven't seen any come right, but that's not the point of this question. I wanted to ask you, Dr. Anderson, why the Air Force didn't keep you on.
Oh, I would have enjoyed that quite immensely. And before I answer this question, I want to preface this with the Air Force recruited me at quite a young age, and they gave me opportunities to do things that most people would live a lifetime and never get to touch. I was given access to resources and technologies and opportunities that were phenomenal. So I'm very grateful to the Air Force. And at the time I was working with them, we were on a mission on that was related to high-speed navigation systems, space-based. I can't get into the more detail. And I had recognized a phenomenon and a relationship I wanted to explore that had tremendous potential with regards to time control technology. However, the organization, I had talked to Air Force Systems Command, my colleagues over at DARPA, and a couple other agencies, and at the time they were so focused on the mission that they really didn't take the time to truly understand the implications that were there until, Freeman, it was 2 weeks prior to my separation. I had shipped my household goods, sold everything I had. I didn't have a bed to sleep in, and my separation was refused. Somebody at Air Force Systems Command who finally got a hold of the paper understood it. And I actually had to petition with Senator Rockefeller in West Virginia and start a congressional inquiry to get released, because by that time I had already committed. I wanted to move forward and launch the Time Technology Research Center. And so it was quite an interesting story. I don't know what would have happened if I would have stayed in the Air Force.
I'm kind of glad that you're out in the open, not behind the covert doors of the military. You're being able to come out here and talk to me now. What can we look at in the future of time travel? Is it going to be a rich man's game?
Well, you know, for so many strategic and tactical reasons, governments and the ones who are controlling the technology want to keep it classified and kept secret. And like we talked about before, you could even say that probably, and right now it's true, and I can say for a fact, I've sat in with the Ministry of Technologies in China, in India, in Korea, in multiple countries, in different government agencies, and it's only the highest ranking officials that are being allowed to know that the technology is available. But these politicians are really subject to the same temptations, and they really don't want to let the general public know. And most likely it will be a rich man's game, and it will be a rich country's game, or a country that has a technological superiority within the field of time controls. And, in the cases of time wars, these leaders actually think they can view future battlefields and change plans based upon effectiveness by looking into the future. And if they have a failed operation, they can send communications back to themselves in time to notify themselves about it. Why this technology has such a great potential to save lives, it's being looked at from such a weaponization standpoint. But still, with that said, the real issue is we're using technologies that we don't understand the consequences of.
Yes. I do a study of corporate logos and their occult meanings, and I couldn't help but notice your corporate logo. It looks very similar to the missile defense corporate logo that they have just come out, kind of coupled with the Obama logo. I have to ask, did you design that, or where did that come from?
Wow, those are two interesting twists. I've heard it called, it looks like a stealth fighter. I've heard it that it resembles the Freemason symbol. But actually, if you look at it closely, it's an A for Anderson, an M for multinational, the parent corporation of the Anderson Institute. So is there more to it than that? I can't confirm or deny that, Freeman.
All right. Are you a Freemason?
I'm sorry. The connection broke up. I can't confirm or deny anything.
Right. Did you witness the Norway spiral?
I did not witness it. No. I've seen some pictures, but I really haven't had a chance to delve into it myself.
Okay, I just thought I'd ask. Some people had connected this with some of the ancient Bell Nazi experiments. Have you heard of the Nazi Bell experiments?
No, I can't say I have. I'm a little more focused, a little more aware of some of the work that was done in the former Soviet Union than in Germany.
Okay, just thought I'd check with that because some people had some questions whether there was a connection with this Norway spiral and the attempts at time travel in Norway. But we can pick that up next time, perhaps when we get you back.
Wonderful.
All right. So why don't we get into some of the different types of technologies? What are some of the different time travel devices or abilities out there?
Well, there's different types of technologies that are used. And really the first place to start when you talk about time control technologies is really to break it into two categories. And unfortunately, it's I don't mean to make it complicated, but there are technologies that are based upon special relativity developed by Albert Einstein that require very fast speeds and accelerations across distance to dilate time. And then there's a phenomenon called closed time-like curves. Some of the capabilities that are being experimented with in California, in New Mexico, in Japan, and very soon in Korea, and also in India, are quantum tunneling. This is the ability to use what's called in physics a evanescent wave coupling effect, where you can actually send information. For example, in Princeton University, they use the cesium chamber, where you send information into a chamber, and the information actually finishes leaving before it finishes entering. It actually travels faster than the speed of light backwards in time. This is an effect in a physics called quantum tunneling. And it's used for sending information forward or backwards in time. There's the capabilities of near light speed travel that allow you to, as you get closer to the speed of light, time dilation occurs. For example, that astronaut who travels away to a distant star and returns will be much younger than the twin brother she left behind on Earth. There's something called an Alcubierre warp drive, which is we have some wonderful pictures of on our website. But imagine you're in a rowboat on a lake, Freeman, or if your listeners can, if you were to go to the front of the rowboat and create a well in the water, pull the water down, and raise the water behind the rowboat, essentially the boat would kind of slip forward into the well and would slide across the top of the water. And that's the phenomenon of an Alcubierre warp drive that's being considered for long-distance spaceflight. Wow. Faster than light travel is another approach, but it is not possible within our laws of physics. However, technologies like time warp field technology that used closed time-like curves, other technologies like circulating light beams being proposed by scientists at the University of Connecticut, and wormholes and other naturally occurring phenomena like cosmic strings can create fields of closed time-like curve and allow time travel to the past.
Well, I mentioned your first DVD, Time Travel, Journeys into Time. I hear you have another one coming out. Would you like to tell us about a little bit about your DVDs, where we could find them, and how we could get them?
Well, certainly. One of our first DVDs was Time Travel, Journeys into Time. It's a great introduction to man's struggle to understand the true nature of time through the ages. It's available on Amazon.com. We have the AndersonInstitute.com website. It is a free source of information, a multidisciplinary source of information to many aspects of studying time. We have a lot of free information and a growing library of educational archives related to time that are going to be posted over the coming months. So a lot of things happening there. But our flagship project right now, Freeman, is our new documentary where, going back to our message about full transparency and disclosure, we kind of want to blow the lid off of this. A new documentary called Time Will No Longer Tell will be released by us in less than 2 months and will be available on Amazon.com and announced on our website and via Facebook as well.
Well, I will definitely be looking to that, and I'm linked to you on Facebook as well. You can find me on Facebook, people, if you look for Freeman Fly. It's the only thing in my repertoire that's not Freeman TV. So you can hook up with Dr. Anderson on Facebook at, is it Anderson Institute?
No, just David Lewis Anderson. And okay. You're welcome to speak with any of your listeners at any time.
Fantastic. I think you're going to have a whole bunch more friends. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that DVD for sure. That's because this is all so incredible and yet so pertinent and so necessary to understand, because where this all goes. Oh, we had one question in the chat room. Have you yourself traveled through time?
I have been involved in experiments where I've been inside a time warp field, active in operation, absolutely yes, and on a regular basis. This is occurring in India and other locations in the U.S. As well.
What did you see?
Well, it's interesting. The experience within a time warp field, and I can speak to that directly, is different from individual to individual. Some people have no effect. Other people experience incredible excitement. Other people have claimed to have spiritual awakenings. There are some physical effects like tingling. Some people do experience a little bit of nausea and other things. But we don't know what truly causes some of that. We know some of the physical effects. But we're putting people in an environment that is so remarkably different in a shock to their senses that we don't know if this is the human condition. You know, when you put a human being in a very different and unusual situation, the reactions can be everything from spiritual to nothing. We don't know if that's what we're seeing or if it's truly opening new doors for people inside a field.
Interesting. So we're still caught up in the idea, is it mental or is it physical?
But I got to tell you, Freeman, if I could add an additional comment, the one of the most amazing effects is not people inside the field. It's when people observe a field firsthand, which we hope to include in our next video. But the reaction is initially disbelief, skepticism. Then it's total shock and disbelief or shock. But what happens after that is deep emotion. We've seen people laugh hysterically when they see what can happen inside a field. When they actually see inside a field, time speed up or slow down, when they see objects that should be falling or moving upwards or come reverse themselves and defy the laws of nature, and they see a plant or a flower regress in aging, and they see this in front of their eyes and they can stick their hand through a field, they experience everything from tears to laughter. And the most amazing thing, Freeman, and I talk about it a lot, is I can almost guarantee you that 2 weeks, 1 or 2 weeks after a visit to our facility, people will call me and say they cannot go about life the same way anymore, because the reality that they know is real doesn't relate. What they've seen is such a, and they've experienced for their entire life, is just a fraction of what they know now is real.
Well, that is what I'm hoping will occur, that as all these things transpire, we start to realize our limitations, our limited thought, and just these possibilities just totally reorient our entire experience on planet Earth.
It's so well said, you know, Freeman. People don't realize we're kind of like an old TV, not for the young kids out there that grew up on digital cable, but for a lot of us who are older, that old television sits sitting on the table, and it has a tuner on it, and it tunes into those waves of information and energy flowing through the sky. Our minds are like that tuner. Our minds have the capability to tune into that true reality and universe of information and energy, but the problem is our tuners are limited. Our senses don't let us see what's truly out there, but it's around us all the time. It's inside of us all the time. And I like your words on it. And we have so much opportunity to grow and to learn.
Absolutely. I'm out for that. And I love pushing the boundaries. I love thinking outside of the box. And I know that the world is not as it appears, and that we're all kind of hanging back in our little boxes, not witnessing what's really going on around us.
I think pretty soon in Wikipedia, under the definition of pushing the boundaries, we're going to see Freeman as a fundamental part of that definition pretty soon.
Hey, I would love that. I've yet to have a Wikipedia page. Do you have one on time travel?
We have some with regards to some of our foundation projects with the United Nations and youth programs. We actually have a cycle on and off, depending on what we're saying. Some interests seem to like to turn us off. We were recently there, then we weren't, then we were, and now we're not.
Right. I know how Wikipedia can be. There's a lot of reorienting timelines in the Internet. There's no doubt about that. Well, so why is time so difficult to understand?
Well, I think there's a couple different reasons. The human psychology, we just talked about the limitations of the human senses, our inability to perceive very much of the true reality around us. We know from science that's true. The function of the brain, the human mind, we try to, the function is to rationalize what our senses perceive with our belief system. If we can't perceive it, it's not real. Maybe human psychology. Some of my favorite quotes, time is the fire in which we burn. Time is a great teacher, but unfortunately it kills all its pupils. We always feel the passing of time. We feel pushed by it, and we always feel it's linked to our own mortality. Also, we've gone a little materialistic, Freeman. Sometimes we shrink the magic of the world to our daily routine and material possessions. But the true barrier, really, to learning and understanding is our biological, cultural, and cultural evolution. Biologically, the human mind evolved for limited purposes. We have limited senses. They're not fully developed. We know they only perceive a fraction of reality. Our mind rationalizes. Think about cultural evolution. We're having this conversation. People on the other side of the world would think we're nuts. As crazy as we think they are, that all time when they say all time exists at the same place, your listeners might be thinking of that. Some cultures think we're nuts. Then we say time is linear and it moves like an arrow. They think we're crazy. What's right in one culture is wrong in another. And I'd remind, you know, your listeners is that the way they sense time is formed by patterns of survival formed over thousands of years that blinds us to perceiving the true nature of reality. We don't see the universe and reality the way it is. We see it the way we are. And that's the first step to really learning and understanding, is overcoming that.
So would we be able to go back and, say, stop 9/11 from happening?
Absolutely. The problem is, do we know the ramifications of that? Right. Do we know what the ripple effect is? And why we intend to do good, The complex web of interdependencies that go even with the smallest change in reengineering history, we don't understand. There are so many opportunities and so many good intentions that could go wrong here, like have, as a human society, we've demonstrated before we can do.
It's true. It is very true. And that is very dangerous, not knowing. I suppose I'd rather just try and reorient now. Well, when we get back, we're going to discuss the World Genesis Foundation and Dr. Anderson's ambassadorialship to the youth at the UN. Oh, a higher love is necessary. With all this technology opening up, we better find our spiritual selves here and quick so that we can start putting these things to good use and find our global community. And on the ideas of global community, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your World Genesis Foundation, Dr. Anderson.
Oh, thank you so much for asking. I always enjoy talking about it, but it's risky bringing me in because I'll talk too much. I was working with a group of people back in 1999, and we established a foundation called the World Genesis Foundation. It's a not-for-profit corporation, and it's committed to a simple mission, to leave no child without hope for the future. And we have a very specific charter. We work in cooperation with the United Nations Educational, Science, and Cultural Organization and other partners, and we go and work in areas of the world to create opportunities for youth where opportunities are limited or simply unavailable. So when we go in to do a program, we're basically trying to work in situations where there are no alternatives, and every program and every dollar, every minute volunteered by somebody with the World Genesis Foundation kind of creates hope from hopelessness. And there is just incredible need there. And if anybody's interested, our foundation is called the World Genesis Foundation. It's worldgenesis.org. It was good background there of what we do and the projects we're involved in. And also for any of you Amazon.com shoppers out there, we have a project with them called HopeMart.org. Like Walmart, but HopeMart. And if you purchase on Amazon, you'll still get the same great products from Amazon and the same great service, but they will in turn donate money to create opportunities for youth. So I hope you check it out. And thanks for the opportunity to say a few words, Freeman.
Not a problem. The youth are our future, and I definitely, hoping a lot of children are listening to the show. I know a lot do. You know, I get 10, 11-year-olds writing me saying they love the show and they love the experience, and to me, that's everything. That's you know, the old folks, like Ryle said, are going to die and be replaced by you. Well, if we wanted to understand a bit more about this and get a little deeper into understanding time travel technologies, is there some literature or books that you might recommend?
First thing I would recommend is visit the Anderson Institute. All the information posted there is for free, and we're going to see a significant expansion. There's several hundred pages of information there now, a lot more coming before the end of this summer. I'd encourage you after that to contact us. One of your listeners finds an area of interest and they'd like to delve further, we have connections all around the world with experts in so many areas, whether it be time control technology or remote viewing or other experiments in time or beliefs in time. Some of my favorite books, though, I have to admit, for your younger viewers, Freeman, would be some of the science fiction books, because they have some valuable lessons for us. Is it okay if I mention a few of my favorites?
Please do.
Well, time has been around in works for a long time. Even as early as 2000 BC, there was the Gilgamesh epic. It was a Babylon work searching for ultimate knowledge and immortality. But some of the best works about time travel and classics today in 1880 were Edwin Abbott's Flatlands, followed by Mark Twain's A Yankee in the Court of King Arthur. And then in 1895, H.G. Wells introduced his classic work, The Time Machine. And fascinating work, a book published in 1895 that has never been out of print, not something that many books can really say. But I got to tell you, Freeman, for your listeners, a lot of people might be surprised, but my favorite book is the more obscure work by Edwin Abbott called Flatlands. And it's about these two-dimensional creatures that lived in a two-dimensional world, like on a piece of paper. Imagine a dot is a creature living on a piece of paper, moving back and forth on the paper, running into lines or boxes that might represent walls or fences or their homes or their doors. And until one day they're moving around in a little two-dimensional world, and a three-dimensional sphere comes moving down. It touches their two-dimensional world. They see it appear like a dot. As it passes through, it grows, it shrinks, and then it vanishes into nothing. To these two-dimensional creatures, perceiving and visualizing a higher dimension was a very difficult proposition. They only knew north, south, east, and west. They didn't know up and down. And I like that because just like the creatures in Flatland, we have as many barriers in his minds as they did. While we can see a sphere above a piece of paper, we can't see that time is simply another dimension of space. But just to blow your elite reader's mind, I'll recommend another book. It's called Space-Time Physics. It was written by two friends of mine, Edwin Taylor and John Archibald Wheeler, who just passed away 2 years ago. And I'll blow your mind with something that book presents. Take your wristwatch and arbitrarily, just hypothetically, convert time to meters using the speed of light as a constant. And what you'll find out is something is created called invariance of the space-time interval, which can boil down many elements of space-time physics to basic algebra. Think about that. Time is different. It's different than north, south, east, west, and up and down. Besides, we've always treated it differently. However, if for a moment you treat it the same and you convert it to meters or feet, whatever your favorite units are, what you'll find out is that the difficult problems of space-time physics boil down to algebra. But we can't perceive it. But a book called Space-Time Physics by John Archibald Wheeler and Edwin Taylor.
All right. One of my favorites is The Tao of Physics.
Oh, great book. Great book.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Anderson, in your time travel, do you have any predictions for us for the future?
Yes, the future is uncertain. No, I do have a prediction. We're playing with technologies as a society that we shouldn't be playing with without understanding the consequences. To the listeners, my prediction is if we can't accomplish full disclosure and transparency and get an educational program done, we can solve that problem. We will solve that problem. The challenge is if we do not set up a global moral compass that guides how we use this technology that crosses political, geographic, lines of religions and ethnicity and language, we will not solve this problem. We have to begin acting as a single global consciousness and a guiding force that determines how not only we use this technology today, but we develop it. And my only prediction is the future is uncertain. It is possible we could go through a lot more pain, but I am an optimist. I do believe that it's very possible we can solve this problem. As a matter of fact, when we talk about a technology as dangerous as this, I believe it's something that can actually unify the global societies and the global consciousness.
Well, that is what we are all hoping for. As we watch all of this unfold before our very eyes, the idea of Michael Jackson traveling through time, the cloning of humans, the punching holes through the other dimension, all of these things that are just hitting this generation, and it's got to open our minds to the spiritual aspects of life and how all of this can come together in a positive light.